Parsha podcast from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. This week, Rabbi Howard Marcos discusses Nitzavim Vayelech. Before you listen, we'd like to let you know about a great new mini-series we have just released in preparation for the Chagim called Tshuva and Time Travel. In this series, Rabbi Dr. Sam Liebens leads a tour through classical Jewish texts on the nature of repentance and explores them through the lens of contemporary philosophical reflection on the nature of time. You can listen now on www.elmad.pardes.org or on our Pardes Live channel in iTunes, Stitcher, and many other of your preferred podcast providers. And now, back to our podcast and Rabbi Howard Marcos.
As most of our listeners know, there are many traditional exegetical methods whereby the Torah is interpreted. Four of them are known affectionately as Pardes, from the initial letters of the word, which are Pei, Pshat, implying the establishment of the literal meaning, Resh, Remez, which is a meaning which is only hinted to by the text, Dalet, Drash, which is essentially the homiletical meaning, and Samech, Sod, the esoteric or mystical meaning. Allow me to share with you illustrations of most of the interpretive methods by way of interesting verses found in the Torah. In the story of Potiphar's wife, who attempted to seduce Joseph, we are informed by the narrator of the story in chapter 39 of Bereshit, verse 6, that Potiphar placed Joseph in charge of everything in his household. Ki im halechem asher hu ochel, save the food which he would eat. If you look at your source sheets, you'll see that Ibn Ezra has something to say about that. He is a 14th century Spanish commentator, and he suggests that we are to read this verse exactly as it is written. He states, "There are those who say that the eating of bread is a euphemism for sleeping with his wife, but I think that is far-fetched, because Joseph's master was a eunuch, after all. The way I see it is that Joseph had control over everything in the house except for Potiphar's food, which he wasn't even allowed to touch because Joseph was a Hebrew. For it is stated plainly that the Egyptians could not break bread with the Hebrews, and Potiphar knew that Joseph was a Hebrew, which we know because his wife stated, Re'u, ki hevin lanu ish ivri. Look, he had to bring us a Hebrew." This is Pshat. The text says that Joseph couldn't be in charge of Potiphar's food, and that's a literal understanding of the text. The Drash, however, allows us to understand the word Lechem a little bit differently. Rashi, the great 13th century French commentator, says the following about the bread of which Joseph could not be in charge. V'lo yadaito me'uma, lo haya noten libo laklum, ki im halechem, hi ishto, ela shediber bilashon nikiya. Quoting Midrash Rabbah, which was edited perhaps around the 5th century of the Common Era, Rashi says that when the Torah says he paid attention to nothing save the food that he ate, Potiphar paid no attention to anything except for the food that is his wife, says Rashi. And the word food is a euphemism for wife. Is this explanation an accurate reading of the text? In answer to this question, I would say that this is the greatest aspect of Drash. While it may not be a literal rendering of the text, there is every reason to believe that it is an accurate depiction of what is intended. This is certainly the case in our instance, especially when verse 9 of the same chapter has Joseph protesting to Potiphar's wife, saying, "Look, with me here, my master gives no thought to anything in this house, and all that he owns he has placed in my hands. He wields no more authority in this house than I. V'lo chasach mimeni me'uma, ki im otach ba'asher at ishto. And he has withheld nothing from me except yourself, since you are his wife." The narrator used the words me'uma ki im halechem, nothing save the bread, and Joseph is reported to have said the words me'uma ki im otach, nothing is withheld except you, his wife. The expression nothing but food is using exactly the same phrasing as nothing but you, his wife, leaving us to consider that perhaps the two are indeed the same. Potiphar's food is his wife. This is drash. What might a remez, a hint, be in our biblical text? Oftentimes, the remez comes to us in the form of a gematria equivalent, whereby one word or set of words has the same numerical equivalent, where aleph is equal to 1, hey is equal to 5, yud is 10, kaf is 20, kuf is 100, resh is 200, and so on. And it would have a numerical equivalent as another word or phrase. So in our case, if we add up the gematria, the numerical equivalent of the words ki im halechem asher hu ochel, which means save the food that he ate or eats, we are taught that we get the same gematria equivalent as the words he ishto, she is his wife. I did the math a few times, and the words he ishto comes out to 723, while the other phrase, ki im halechem asher hu ochel, has the gematria of 724. So one has 723, the other has 724. They're not really equal. So how can we reconcile the difference between these two gematrias? The rabbi suggests, just eat another piece of bread and it'll all work out. Sod is generally connected to the mystical meaning of a text, often elaborated upon by important Jewish works such as the Zohar, which understands the words of the Torah at a level which is beyond the scope of this podcast, in large part because, unlike my esteemed colleagues and friends who are at Pardes, I am not well-versed in the secrets of mysticism at all. But I want to tell you that of these four exegetical devices used to give meaning to our Torah, I would venture to say that Pshat and Drash have traditionally received the most attention from those of us who enjoy a relaxing foray into Torah study. To these traditional methods of biblical exegesis, I would like to add a fifth dimension, namely archaeology and the discovery of a world of literature in the ancient Near East, all of which might just cast an even brighter light on our striving to understand the text of the Torah. In this podcast, I would like to journey into the fields of Pshat, Drash, and recent literary discoveries in hopes of understanding the opening words of the second of the two parshiot, the two Torah portions, which we will be reading this week in the synagogue. Those Torah portions are called Nitzavim and Vayelech, and I'd like to ask you to permit me to focus on the opening verse of that second parasha, which goes like this, and you can find it on your source sheet as well. Vayelech Moshe, Vaydaber et hadvarim ha'ele el kol Yisrael. The new JPS translation of this verse renders, Moses went and spoke these things to all Israel. I'd like to point out to you that while there are a great many verses that have a person going and then taking on another action, nowhere in our Tanakh do we encounter going and speaking. Vayelech vayedaber. We have vayelech vayikach, he went and took, or vayelech vayisa, he went and traveled, and other possibilities, but nowhere in our biblical text do we find the combination vayelech vayedaber. I am aware that in English we might say, for example, he went and spent all of his money, even though it is not at all clear where it was that he went. It is a figure of speech that, to my knowledge, is not found in either biblical or modern Hebrew. So should it matter that the phrase is unique? Not usually. But there was a recent discovery in the cache of the Dead Sea Scrolls which quotes this verse with a slightly different rendering in the Hebrew. Dating from around the 2nd century before the Common Era, a document found in the southeastern portion of modern-day Israel opens up chapter 31 of Devarim, Deuteronomy, with the following words. Instead of Vayelech Moshe Vayedaber, Moshe went and spoke, we read Vayichal Moshe Ledaber. Moshe finished speaking. All that happened to make this verse read this alternative way is for the letters Kaf and Lamed to switch places. Come on, Howard. You can't simply switch letters indiscriminately in the Torah. I hear what you're saying. Well, sometimes maybe you can. For example, the word for dress or frock in the Hebrew Bible is simla, or it's also found as salma, with the lamed and the mem switching places. Or how about kivsa and kisba as the word in the Tanakh to describe a calf bound for sacrifice? Here the bet and the sin interchange. So why can't we do the same with the kaf and the lamed in the words vayelech and vayichal? The vocalization is another aspect of this, which was a much later addition to our Torah text, and so that we're not going to pay too much attention to at this time. And I'd like to take this argument one step further, if I may. You recall that I mentioned that there is no place in the Tanakh where the combination of verbs vayelech and vayedaber, he went and spoke, is found, right? Might we find a place in which we read the combination vayichal and ledaber, reflecting the exact wording of this portion as found in the Dead Sea Scrolls? Please check your source sheet for Deuteronomy 32:45. There we read of the end of Moshe's speech to the children of Israel. We are told, Vayichal Moshe ledaber et kol hadvarim ha'ele el kol Yisrael. Moshe finished reciting all of these words to all Israel. Sounds an awful lot like the proposed emended text from the previous chapter, Vayichal Moshe ledaber et hadvarim ha'ele el kol Yisrael. And to make matters even more convincing, I would like to tell you that upon further investigation, we have found that the Septuagint, the earliest Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible, completed around the end of the 2nd century before the Common Era, has as its opening words of chapter 31, and Moses finished, the word, that second word there is sune telese, which means completed or finished. Moses finished speaking all these words to all the children of Israel. Moshe finished, and not Moshe went. So let's review. There is a snippet from the Dead Sea Scrolls, written between 150 BCE and 70 of the Common Era, identified with Deuteronomy 31:1, which has the words in Hebrew, Vayichal Moshe ledaber, instead of what we read in our Torah, Vayelech Moshe vayedaber. The oldest Greek translation of the verse also has Moshe completed and not Moshe went. We also have a verse in Deuteronomy chapter 32 which echoes this phrase exactly. Vayichal Moshe ledaber et kol hadvarim ha'ele el kol Yisrael. Moshe finished reciting all of these words to all Israel. So which reading is correct? Which is the pshat of the verse is another way of putting that question. You might think that I might want to go with the amended text, Vayichal Moshe ledaber, based on the somewhat compelling evidence which I just presented. But I'm not going to. Instead, I hope to invoke an often used hermeneutical device used to understand the text called Lectio Difficilior, which is short for Lectio Difficilior Potior. The more difficult reading is the stronger one. In our case, because the syntax is almost forced in the version found in our Torah, it is indeed the more difficult reading, and therefore, based on the general principle of Lectio Difficilior, it, the traditional, the standard verse, Vayelech Moshe Vayadaber, is the preferred text. It's possible, then, that the writers of the Septuagint, as well as those who assembled the Dead Sea Scrolls, sensed this difficulty in the text, as we do, and tried to smooth it over by changing a couple of letters here and there so that the reading would be more correct or palatable, as it were. I would like to reject this approach this time and hang on to the verse as beginning with Vayelech Moshe Vayedaber. So, if this is the case, then it's up to us to address the question, If the Torah tells us Vayelech Moshe, Moshe went, from where did Moshe come? And where did he go? It's true that although the camp of Israel was united as one in many ways, the camp of the tribe of Levites, to which Moshe belonged, was separated from the camp of the rest of the children of Israel. An explanation of the pshat of the phrase might be that Moshe, in order to deliver his last address to the Israelites, left the camp of the Levites and made his way to the camp of greater Israel in order to speak with them. However, Moshe resided in the Levite camp throughout the wandering in the wilderness, so this explanation does not address the unique nature of his action that is referenced at this time in our Torah portion. Furthermore, in the book of Bamidbar, in the book of Numbers, when Moshe desires to address the people, he would sound trumpets to summon the community. Sound the trumpets, Moshe is instructed by God in Numbers 10, verses 1 to 4, and the whole community will assemble before you at the entrance of the tent of meeting. Please note that Moshe summoned the people to gather around him. He did not go to the people. We have phrases such as Vayakhel Moshe, Moshe assembled all of the people, as well as Vayikrevu kol ha'ida el Moshe, and the people came near to Moshe. Why then, on this, the last day of Moshe's life, did he go to the people instead of his usual action of bringing the people to congregate around him? We could well imagine Moshe sitting in solitude on a rock just east of the Jordan River, watching his flock pass by him, ready to enter into the promised land, leaving their leader of 40-plus years behind. Some would shake his hand. Others might even give him a sympathetic pat on the shoulder as if to say, "Thanks, Moshe. A job well done, but we can take it from here." But no, the Torah tells us, Vayelech Moshe. Moshe went out to the people. He did not wait for them to come to him at this time of separation. Only after he made his way to them, bidding the Israelites goodbye, did he then deliver his final address just prior to his demise. It seems that this understanding of the pshat provides a bit of insight into the kind of person that Moshe was, humble, kind, and completely devoid of an ego. His priority was to go to the people and wish them well, in spite of his sadness and disappointment that he would not be the one to lead the people into what would become Eretz Yisrael. It's the good sport who, following a devastating loss, runs over to the victorious opponent to offer their congratulations. We just finished following the excitement of the U.S. Open tennis tournament, and if you may have watched the competition at any time and had a chance to see the end of a match, you might have seen the loser run up to the net to wish the winner well. Or perhaps you saw that it was the victor that made the first move, wishing her opponent good game. I have seen both scenarios, but I'm always impressed when it is the loser who goes toward the winner, extending a hand of congratulations. Moshe knew that the others in the camp would soon be celebrating their move into the land flowing with milk and honey, entering this new and exciting phase of their lives without him. He could easily have sat in silence, depressed as he must have been, collecting sad wishes of encouragement from the people. Too bad about the divine decree, eh? Well, we'll think of you when we get to the other side. Instead, Moshe went out to them, providing them with words of encouragement, sage advice, and a strong vote of confidence so that he could contribute his part to their successful entry into the new land. His days were numbered, and Moshe took to the offensive and made his every move count. He was not paralyzed by virtue of his being disallowed from leading the people any further. Instead, Vayelech Moshe, he took the initiative and went forward and didn't wait for the inevitable to come to him. We're in the month preceding Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, in which repentance and changing our ways comprise one important theme in this time of year. The Mishnah teaches us, Shuv Yom Echad Lifnei Mitatcha, repent the day before you die. But who knows when that day will be? So what we are being taught is that we should be living every day as if it were our last day on this earth. If we have wronged someone, we shouldn't wait until tomorrow to say we are sorry. Or if there is someone that we have wanted to contact and talk to, but have put it off, today is the day to get out there and make the connection. This is one rather important understanding of the pshat of Vayelech Moshe. He took the initiative and went out there to encourage the community in any way he could. We too can take the initiative to change the status quo for the better and do today what we have in mind to do. I'd like to conclude with yet another understanding of our Torah verse. Vayelech Moshe, Vaydaber et kol et hadvarim ha'ele el kol Yisrael. My next comment is drash to be sure, but I believe important nonetheless. Vayelech Moshe. Moshe has gone. He is no longer with us in the physical world. Vaydaber et hadvarim ha'ele el kol Yisrael. But still, he speaks these words unto all Israel. This can be a message about Moshe, but it can also be about each and every one of us. Moshe went the way of his ancestors before him, but his words continue to speak to Israel even today. Torat Moshe, the Torah of Moshe, as dictated to him by God, is a living testimony to the great impression and legacy which Moshe left behind. How many times have we remarked how, even though a loved one is no longer with us in this world, we still find ourselves quoting them or considering what would they have done in this situation? They may have gone, but their words and their deeds continue to speak to those who desire to listen out of love or out of friendship. We can only hope that our families and our friends will continue to reflect on our words and our deeds after we have gone. But like Moshe Rabbeinu, we must take the initiative to share with others, even when times are difficult, today, at this time. Consider the first two words of the two parshiot that will be read in the synagogue this coming Shabbat. Atem nitzavim. Don't read it as a statement, but rather as a question. Atem nitzavim? Are you standing still in one place? Moshe asks the people. Vayelech Moshe. Moshe is not. He is the mover, going somewhere with his teachings, his display of moral values, and his faith in God. Simply stated, which are we? Those who are perhaps stuck standing in one place? Or those, Vayelech Moshe, with direction, with drive, and with goals? This was the question pondered by our ancient text. And this is the question continued to be asked of each of us, the modern Jew. Shabbat Shalom and Shana Tova.
Thank you for listening to Pardes from Jerusalem, the weekly Parsha podcast from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit www.elmad.pardes.org.